Good morning. Hey, it works now. Imagine what putting a fresh battery in will do. So something kind of funny happened to a friend of mine this past week. Actually, it's somebody that you all know also. It's one of our missionaries, the Boyces, who are down in Chile. Tabby, who I don't know how old she is. I'm thinking early 30s, somewhere in there. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but the millennial generation of which she is a part, some of them, when they're trying to be rude to older people who, you know, they just want to, okay, whatever, they'll say, okay, boomer, referring to, you know, the boomers, the baby boomers. And it's kind of a, okay, boomer, whatever. Their generation kind of invented that term. She said this week she was having a conversation with a high school student. Now, she's a millennial, and she's talking to a high school student, and they were having a disagreement, and the high school student said to her, okay, boomer, what goes around comes around. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about fear and fears that we have, both legitimate and otherwise. It happened to be that after, I mean, I picked this sermon topic, 8 weeks ago at least, and this week, in fact, it was yesterday or the day before I was listening to the radio. Yeah, it was yesterday. I was in the car listening to the radio, and they had somebody on there talking about irrational fears. And one of the things they pointed out, which I never really thought about, is that the things we worry about are almost never the things that actually happen and go bad. The things we worry about, we try to do something about, and we worry about things that are possibilities in the future, which usually don't ever actually come about. Usually when something bad happens, it hits us from the blind side and we don't even see it coming. And so they were pointing out that most of our worries are pointless worries. When things are going to hit you, chances are you're not even going to see it coming. So don't be sitting there fretting away your life over things that don't matter. I have a friend in Michigan, and I want you to know I asked his permission to tell you this story. He's a friend of mine from my days at the bus garage back in Michigan. And he's a big teddy bear, okay? But if you don't know that he's a big, lovable teddy bear, he can be pretty intimidating. He is, I would say, at least 6 foot tall. He's probably more like 6'1 or 6'2. He's about 300 pounds. He's almost a yard wide at the shoulders. He is a big, tough-looking dude. And he's a black guy who keeps his head shaved, and he's got a goatee. And if he gives a scowl at you, you would think that there was some serious danger coming your way. But he's a big teddy bear. He's a good Christian family man, and just, you know, he's just a good all-round guy. But he knows how to not let you know that he's a not all-round good guy if he wants to put that look on. You know what I'm talking about? Well, he and I worked together at the school bus garage, which was on city-owned property. And right next to that was a big open space of city-owned property that every year they would have their city festival on. They had set it all up that way with electrical rows, you know, put in with boxes for all the different booths that would set up. And so every year for a week, they would have the big Apple Festival set up right next to where we worked. And, you know, fair food is delicious, and everybody loves it. And, well, not everybody loves it, but most everybody loves it until after they've eaten it. And then you don't love it so much anymore. But anyway, there's all kinds of goodies and rides and booths selling things. And so when they would set up, I mean, it's literally the edge of our property is where the rides and stuff start. So we would go over there and, you know, walk through on our off time. Now, somebody played a trick on my friend Angelo because they knew a certain fear that my friend had. Now, this fear is shared by a few people, but it's kind of a minority fear. It's very few people have this. But they knew that he had this fear, and so they played a trick on him. Now, imagine the guy that I described, okay? Huge, tough-looking dude. He goes over to the fair just to check it out, see if there's anything there he wants to get. One of our coworkers had gone over ahead of him, and his fear is of those silly people with big feet. Do you know what I'm talking about? He's terrified of clowns. Clowns, they scare him. I don't know why, but they do. And somebody had gone over, knowing he was coming over, went up to one of the clowns there, a little guy about 5 feet tall, in one of the silliest clown outfits, not scary at all, just silly, and told him, hey, my friend Angelo is coming over here, and he loves clowns. Would you run up and give him a big hug? Now, I wasn't there, but I saw him retreating, we'll say. I see, all of a sudden, my friend, who almost anybody would be afraid of, fleeing as fast as he could move his 300 pounds, with eyes this big, running as fast as he could move to get away from there, while this little teeny 5 foot clown is running after him going, hello, hey, how you doing? Terrified. Now, I'm not afraid of clowns, but to him, at that moment, that fear was as real as if it was a crocodile chasing after him that wanted to kill him and eat him. It was something that to him was absolutely terrifying. We have fears. Sometimes our fears are genuine. Sometimes our fears are things that we don't really need to be afraid of. By the way, I don't know who did that to him, but I'll bet he found out. Follow along with me as we read the main scripture for today from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 10, verses 26 through 33. So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the daylight. And what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs on your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. This is a pretty heavy passage, but it's also a pretty encouraging one. Something no one really has appreciation for, something no one really likes, is when there is a thing or an event or an occurrence or the possibility of something that is a real, genuine problem and is a real, genuine fear, something that really has people upset. It's a genuine thing, and everyone just pretends that it's not there. When there is something that's problematic, and people just, let's just not talk about that. If we ignore it, maybe it'll go away. Jesus is recognizing that there are things that are likely to cause us a genuine amount of fear. Things which are going to make us pause in what we're doing and reconsider if we really want to continue in doing them. He addresses those fears and looks at them for what they really are in both the short term and in the long term. He starts off by telling them that nothing is covered or hidden that will not be revealed. This has several possible interpretations. When Jesus says, hey, there's nothing covered that isn't going to be revealed, it could be, Jesus has been keeping it a secret that he is the Messiah, going out of his way to try and not have people reveal who he is. This is early on in his ministry. When he heals people, he keeps telling them, now don't tell anybody who did this. Don't tell them who I am. When he's casting out demons and they want to say that he's the Son of God, he's making them be silent. This could be his way of telling the disciples that that time is about to change. It's also possible that Jesus is telling them that all those evil things that he's already warned them about earlier in this chapter that would be done against them, those will eventually come out in the open and history will show evil people for what they really are. He's saying, look, he could be saying, I'm so, that all these things that happened to you that nobody knows about and don't realize what's happened to you, all of that's going to come out. People are going to know what really happened. It's also possible, considering what he's about to say a few sentences later, that if they think they can secretly deny following him and have it not known, then they're sadly mistaken. God is going to know. I happen to think that it's all three of those things. Yes, the time is soon coming when you're going to be teaching publicly what I've been telling you privately and kept in secret. Yes, the people who abuse you on account of me are going to be seen and known for just exactly the evil cowards that they are. And yes, if you give in to your fears of what might happen to you, it will also be made publicly known. And those, even those most secret of betrayals, that God is going to know about them. In the passage just before this one, back earlier in chapter 10, that led up to this comment, he tells them some very troubling things. I mean, bothersome things. Things that make you go, wait, really? But also some comforting things. In Matthew 10, verses 16 through 20, he said, behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men. Now I want to take just a moment here and pause for a thought. Just because we know that the world is going to hate us because we follow Christ and we have to speak boldly, it doesn't mean that we have to be stupid about how we go about doing it. If someone throws a right hook at you, you don't have to lean into it. You can dodge it. You can try not to get punched. It's perfectly okay to duck. And I also mean it metaphorically as well as literally. When opposition came against Jesus, when we just studied the Gospels last year, I think it was, maybe it was the year before, when we went through all the Gospels in our Wednesday night class, one of the things that you discover is that at least three different times, opposition to Jesus comes to a head. The Pharisees are ready to kill him. And he doesn't push the issue. He leaves. He's down in Judea. Opposition comes against him. They're ready to haul him away. And so he says, see ya. And he goes back to Galilee and lets tempers calm down before he comes back to Judea. Three times at least he does that. And I think that that's a good example. I remember from my, I don't even remember which history class it was, way back when. Both when I took the class was way back when, and also it was teaching me about, a little bit before that. Back in the, 500s, somewhere in that area, they taught us about a bishop who believed so firmly that he must affirm Christ to the authorities that he went, it must have been before 500, I don't know, before Rome acknowledged Christianity, he went and traveled to Rome for the purpose of confronting the emperor and getting himself killed. He intentionally went there for the purpose of being martyred. I don't think that's a great plan. If you're dragged before them, it says you have to give witness. But saying, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go get myself killed. Probably not the best way to go about, you know, living a life of Christianity. Because, you know, your life ends. But carrying on, it says, beware of men, for they will deliver you over to the courts and flog you in their synagogues. And you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say. For what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Our only need is to be willing to speak when we get dragged before people. This is talking to them then. I've never been dragged before anybody, but if the time comes, I hope that I'm willing to speak. Jesus warned them that they should be wise about how they go about taking his word to the world. Use your head. He says, I'm sending you out among wolves, so be wise about how you do it. For people will not treat them well. They should therefore exercise caution, not to shrink back from doing what they're supposed to be doing, but to be wise about how they did it. Could somebody grab me just a glass of water or something? I'm getting a little parched up here. Even with that, however, they would eventually end up with trouble for professing his kingdom and being his followers. When that happened, he told them not to be anxious because the Holy Spirit would be there with us, be right there with us, and give us the words to say. In some of my commentaries, it's interesting. I have some commentaries that were written in the 1600s, and I have some commentaries that were written since the turn of this century. And they're very, very different in how they approach everything. And a lot of times, this is very troubling to me, a lot of times when there is a particular passage, maybe one verse, maybe half a verse, that's difficult, that's hard, that could be interpreted one of two ways or one of three ways, or the way that it's very clearly to be interpreted is a very difficult passage that people aren't going to want to hear. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. A lot of my more modern commentaries do this funny little thing, and they skip it. They're just like, yeah, not touching that one. They don't want to go there. And I don't think that that's a particularly good idea. I think that we need to take on the difficult passages. The reality is that both then and now, Jesus knew that people would die on account of his name. People are dying right now, today, for professing the name of Christ. Places in the Middle East, places in communist China or other communist nations, places in Africa, people are being killed for professing the name of Christ. And one of my commentaries had the audacity to say that what this is telling us is that we don't need to worry because God will be there to protect us. God will keep us safe, which is 180 degrees different than what this passage is actually saying. And I'm thinking, how can you be considered such an authority on Scripture that you are published in a commentary and you tell us that Scripture means exactly the opposite? of what it actually clearly says. Jesus isn't saying don't fear because nothing's going to happen. He's saying not to fear because what can happen is temporary and limited. How is it temporary and limited? It's temporary and limited to the length of the time that you have breath in your lungs. There's a story of a girl who said one word, which got a lot of attention. In fact, it brought about a best-selling book. And then it got a lot of negative attention as being not what actually happened. On April 20th, 1999, a high school boy asked a high school girl one question, and she answered with one word. The question was, do you believe in God? And the answer was yes. But the setting was the Columbine High School library. And the questioner was pointing a gun at the girl after he'd already murdered 10 people. It was at first thought that the girl asked was Cassie Bernal, a troubled 16-year-old who was raised as a Christian but had wandered from her faith, had gone off into drugs and alcohol for a time, rebelling from her parents, and only the summer before had gone to a weekend event with her church youth group and had her fire reignited. She had come back to Christ and devoted herself to Christ again. It was originally thought that this was her. She was hiding underneath a table when the killing was going on. Killer came up, pointed a gun, said, "Do you believe in God?" And the girl being questioned said, "Yes." And see, Cassie Bernal was killed that day. It later came out, after a book had been written about the whole topic by her parents, the investigations came around and found out that the girl who in fact was questioned and asked was Valene Schnurr, who actually survived the attack. This was then used against Christians who had believed that Cassie had been martyred for her faith. But to me, it was simply evidence of the strength and conviction of Valene. She may not have been killed for her answer, but she still had a killer pointing a gun at her and was asked, "Do you believe in God?" And she said, "Yes," and I want you to understand something. He had already shot her once. But when she was put to the question, she said, "Yes." Now, why should we not fear this type of thing? Because God said not to, which is a pretty good answer in and of itself. But he then goes on to tell us why, and the answer is threefold. Matthew 16, verses 25 and 26. Jesus said, "For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul?" Jesus is saying that none of us are getting out of this alive. Anybody who thinks, "Well, you know, when the earth comes to an end, I think I'm going to go do some shopping." What good is it to keep your life, this temporary fleeting thing that we have, even to keep it a good long time and have a cushy, enjoyable life, if it ends up costing us salvation? It just isn't worth it. Secondly, Jesus is telling us that we don't ever have to fear being alone. I want to tell you something. No one ever dies alone. No one. Because God is with them. God is right there. It says God is there even when the sparrow falls. So even if their loved one doesn't happen to be with them, nobody dies alone. No matter what does in fact happen to us, even death, He is right there with us. God cares so much about His creation. And we're the only part of creation that is made in His image. That even a sparrow, the least of animals in the eyes of the people reading this, first reading this, a thing that's here for just a short little time and then it's gone and no one really cares about. Even they are known in the presence of God when they're dying. He notices and cares about even something as insignificant as that. God will most certainly be there for us and be there with us, since, as He says, we are worth more than many sparrows. Thirdly, none of this, none of what happens to us is going to catch God by surprise. He will be the one guiding us as we give our answers to those who will try to get us to deny our faith, holding whatever threat they use. He's going to be there. He will give us the words. He will give us the comfort. All we need do is to remain true to Him. There are a lot of irrational fears that we hold. I have several myself. I worry about things which I ought not worry about. I get worked up that something is going to be wrong. Something's going to go wrong. It will wreck all my efforts that I've been trying to build up. A lot of times we have irrational fears. Fears that somebody else may look at and say, "Why are you afraid of that happening? Why does that bother you so much?" And they don't understand it, because to them it's irrational. But to most people, to almost everybody, one of the reasons we have what other people would think of as an irrational fear is because something like that did happen in the past. I think I may have shared this with you. Doc Dirkus did something very nice for me last week. He told me before church started, I think it was last week, he said, "Hey, I have to leave about halfway through. So see me getting up and walking out, that's why." I have this irrational fear when somebody gets up and walks out during church that I've offended them. Do you know why? Because it's happened a number of times. So somebody's like, "Oh, man, he's going a little over and I got pot roast in the oven. I got to leave." In my mind, I'm going, "Oh, man, what did I just say to make them mad?" Everybody has different ones, but we all have them, these irrational, quote-unquote, fears, because something has happened in the past which has made us afraid of it happening again. And it's hard to shake thinking someone is doing something for a reason when you've had it happen before. Sometimes our fears can be self-fulfilling prophecy, so to speak. We have a fear of something, and that fear brings about an inability to properly act, and it will therefore make us fail in the way that we thought we would. And an awful lot of people are really afraid of sharing their faith. Doing something like that is mind-bogglingly scary to them. And because we work ourselves up about it, guess what? We're going to mess it up because we're all worked up about it, and we're going to come off looking weird. Because we're already worked up that we're going to come off looking weird. I remember a television show that I watched. I think this was in the 80s. Why this stuck with me, I don't know. But there's a high school girl who is like super smart. She's one of the main characters in the show. But she can't take tests. Written tests, she flunks all the time because she gets so worked up over it. People, you know, some people, they go to take a test and they just freeze up. They choke. And her teacher, who has seen her do so great in class, sees her fail a test. So he says, okay, I'm going to let you retake the test. But she's still afraid of taking the test. Somebody else tells him, hey, this is what's going on here. She's terrified of taking tests because she's afraid she's going to do bad on it, which makes her do bad on it. And the teacher walked up to her as he's handing out the tests, and he leans over as he puts the test down on her desk, and he can see that she's sitting there all terrified. And as he puts the test on her desk, he says, he whispers in her ear, you've already got an A. And she says, what? And he says, you've already got an A. I know that you know this stuff. I already wrote it in the book. You've got an A. And all of a sudden, her fear is relieved. And she gets every question right and earns the A that she already has. That is how God is telling us this. He's saying, don't worry about what you're going to say or how you're going to say it, because I've already given you the answers. I'm going to be right there with you. I'm going to get you the A. You're going to be taking the test, but I'm going to be sneaking you the answers. And that alone should relieve our tension that we have. You don't know what you're going to say when you're trying to talk with that person, whether it's your neighbor or your coworker or a person that you meet sometimes for different things, or a member of your family, because you're thinking, I'm going to look bad, I'm going to do this wrong, I'm going to screw it up, and because I screw it up, they're going to go to hell. It sounds irrational, but it's fears running through our heads. And God's saying, guess what? You already have an A. I'm giving you the answers. And then there's finally one last thing. Remember I said people don't like it when there's something there and you just kind of pretend it isn't there. People might be thinking, what if I've already messed this up? What if I already failed to stand up for Christ? He says right here, if you deny me before men, I'm going to deny you before God. Am I damned because when that thing happened, I choked and I answered poorly. I said, oh, no, I'm not. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever felt that way? Go like this. Everybody go like this. Everybody. Now go like this. You got a heartbeat? It's not too late. There's a pretty famous guy in the Bible who pretty famously denied Christ 3 times in a single night. He was terribly remorseful about it, and Jesus went out of his way to make sure that Peter knew that there was still hope for him to be part of the kingdom and not just a small part. He told him, feed my sheep. The most important aspect of this whole passage is that we really, in the end, have nothing to fear, because if we have chosen to be with God, if we have chosen Christ, then He promises to always choose us. If we have chosen to be with Christ, He has chosen to always be with us. If you choose Him, He chooses you. But you've got to make that choice. You can't say, well, you know, I live a pretty good life. I go to church. I put money in the offering plate. I'm a pretty good person. You have to make the choice. You have to give your life to Jesus Christ personally. You can't say, oh, my parents, you know, I was raised Christian. Have you made a choice to give your life to Jesus Christ, to join Him in His death, burial, and resurrection in Christian baptism, rising again a new creation? If you have not, then I encourage you to do so right now as we stand and sing.